Yeah, so we delete this, make it.
And that, a headache or a dizzy some time.
Start a little late.
Well, she's on
dehydration.
On section.
So go ahead, call the meeting order, the House Transportation Committee.
I vote.
Ms. Vice Chairman, thank you for your attention.
Okay.
House Transportation Committee meeting is called to order for Tuesday. Boy, all the days just kind of run together now. It's hard to remember where we're at. Tuesday, the 26th of March of 2002, it's about 2:30 p.m.
But we wanted to be careful.
You're Kukesh, I'm going to make you coring now.
This one is that golden.
I'm coring the chair, and with us we have representatives, Mr. Kukesh, and Scalzi, and Wilson.
Careful that we don't develop.
And we have before us just one piece of legislation, 502, that we've had previously. Thank you, Mike. And I wouldn't announce that the presentation by the Port of Bellingham did actually occur, and since we were in caucus until just 10 minutes ago, and I apologize for that. It was not of my doing that we unfortunately have missed that presentation. However, I understood that members of the Senate Transportation Committee were here, and they conducted that, so we took care of our guests. We've been joined by Representative Kukesh. We had an extra round here just for fun. It's back to Coring for me, so. And Albert, we're here just for the one piece of legislation, 502. And what we're going to do is just have the Department of Transportation, our friends from DOT, to discuss their thoughts in regard to the bill. And I guess they have some concerns in regard to Section 4, which was the portion that we amended into the legislation at our last meeting. That was Representative Green's bill that we merged into our committee bill here. So they're going to articulate their concerns to us, and then we as a committee can decide what change, if we deem necessary, to the bill at that point, or we could perhaps just pass what we have. But I'll leave that at the discretion of the committee. So with that, we'll have our friends from DOT join us.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Mike Downing. I'm the chief engineer for DOT. And I have with me Jeff Otteson, the chief of planning for the department. And we're going to split the testimony, and I'll deal with Section 5 and beyond, and then Jeff will address the beginning portions, which is the planning elements of the bill. So it's your pleasure. Where would you like to start?
Either one is fine. I would start with you. No, you did mention Section 5. Is it not Section 4 and beyond? Page 4, Section 4, on forward, just for clarification.
Well, I may not have the very latest version. What I have is Section 5 that deals with the cost-benefit analysis that's required.
Okay, Mike, what are your thoughts? You said Section 5 one, and you said Section 4 on.
Are we dealing with 4 on forward or 5 on forward?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I missed the first part of the question. The two bills that were merged, 502, or Sections 1 through 3, and Section 4 and 5 are 473.
So he might actually have an older version, so if you could provide him with the current one.
Dennis,
you helped to wear your glasses, right? I can relate. Okay.
Dennis Bouchard advises me that Section 4 was originally part of 473.
Okay, great.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Just want to clarify that. Okay, sir, go ahead.
Okay, so I've spoken to this in the past, and we do have a lot of concern about adding steps in the process and developing a transportation project. It's become increasingly difficult, and there's congressional attention to the question of why does it take so long to get a project through the process. This bill will add steps to the process, and it will cause delays in the development of projects. We're to the point where if a project requires an environmental impact statement, I think the last environmental impact statement that we got through successfully got a record of decision and constructed the project was the Whittier Access Project, and it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court before we could complete it. So that's the kind of hurdle in front of us when we're dealing with an EIS. We have several projects that do require an EIS. Some take an environmental assessment, and then the lowest tier is the categorical exclusions, and those are the simplest for us to get through. An overlay would be a categorical exclusion. Something with a high degree of impact or controversy tends to be become NEIS. And I guess as the chief engineer being responsible for project development, I would advise this committee that we really struggle to get through them now. And it's nearly impossible. Adding a step that makes it more difficult, I'm not sure where that would leave us, but that is what this does. Again, we're concerned about the effect on rural transportation projects. Mm-hmm. I think that when the state of Alaska says to the rest of the country that we're contributing a dollar in gas tax to the Highway Trust Fund, and we receive back $5.2 for every dollar we put in, we're saying that Alaska has unique needs, and that those unique needs should be funded. This portion of this bill is inconsistent with how we represent ourselves to the rest of the country. If we were to follow their model, then we probably would have a positive cost-benefit ratio. But we're saying that Alaska, because we're a developing state, has needs that are different. And so what happens here is, once we get the money brought to Alaska, we say, okay, well, now that we have it, we want to apply a new set of rules and not follow what we've said to the rest of the country is the unique basis for the additional funding that we get. That concerns me. We're going to go through reauthorization here next year. We want to make sure that our delegation is positioned to get us the most money that they can. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this is going to, you know, change their position dramatically, but I think it does raise an issue.
Mm-hmm. So it is your opinion that if we were to enact the green report portion of this legislation here, that it would essentially slow down the road project approval process because of the cost-benefit analysis? Is that basically what you're saying then for rural projects?
I think it will delay the projects, and I think that rural projects will have difficulty. They most likely will not have a positive cost-benefit ratio.
So I certainly have made that a priority of mine as a chairman of the Transportation Committee and looking at ways that we can expedite the development of roads. In fact, we've talked about that previously and cited examples in the MATSU, how we have grown increasingly frustrated with roads projects that we funded, but even to this day that were funded in 95, Trunk Road, for example, remains unfinished. So I don't want to complicate things and make it worse. Appreciate your thoughts. Representative Masick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if you could repeat that number again. $1 that we put in, what was the amount the feds put in?
Through the chair, Representative Masick, we receive $5.2 back in highway trust funds for every dollar that we put in.
The ICT?
Yeah, T21 now, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are you suggesting that we strike all the language or just a selective language, or what is your recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I hadn't considered that question previously. Language that deals with more than 3 years.
Page 5?
Section 5,
four
page
and
5. Controversial projects are projects that have significant social or economic or environmental impacts tend to run more than 3 years. And so this would mean that before we could proceed with any of those kinds of projects, we would end up coming back for reapproval. As we develop a project, we have funding that's dedicated to the design and the development of the project, but we don't have construction funding, and we always come back to the legislature for an appropriation for construction. So if there's concern about a project, there's always a chance to address the issue at that point.
I don't mean to put you on the spot and make it difficult as far as telling us exactly how it should be amended. I know that's can be complex, but we did actually prepare an amendment that we wanted to the committee to consider, and we did run it by as many members as we were able to contact. And perhaps what I should do at this point is just have my staff aide Mike come forth and he can explain what that amendment is. That might help to simplify the process here. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Boy, I feel tall. For the record, I'm Mike Krieger, House Transportation Committee 8. What I passed out to the committee members is language does not deal specifically with the time period that was being discussed by Mr. Downing here just a few moments ago. What these two items address are trying to, for one, limit it to surface transportation projects. This that would take out the marine highway system issues, ports and harbors. That's item number one. Item number two is the first two lines of that, unless number one is a new insertion, but the wording, the bill accompanied by a written cost-benefit analysis of the project, including a detailed justification for the project, is already in 502 that we have in front of us. It's that next section that says, and number two, the project is required for the public health or is necessary to provide road access to a community's airport or port, or is funded through the Rustic Road Program. And what that intent there is to ensure that we have some of the important linkages that would probably not meet the cost-benefit ratio criteria, important linkages for the Southeast Transportation Plan, and also to provide access to communities, airports, and ports, whereas not necessarily being an extensive project to link towns that are a couple hundred miles apart.
Excuse me, Mike. Representative Kukesh, excuse me, Kapsner, and then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarification, does this supplant the parens 1 and 2 in the bill?
May I? No. What this is in, or through the chair, Representative Kapsner, what this is on the next page, the second page. Excuse me, page number six.
Okay.
Line two.
Okay.
Where the word unless appears in the middle of line two.
Okay.
So this wording would be inserted there. The first part of the amendment where the word surface occurs would be on line or page five, line nine.
Okay.
Between new and transportation.
Okay. And then this, if I might, Mr. Chairman, follow up. So the second number two in amendment number one.
Mm-hmm.
My bill doesn't have the word unless.
You don't have the most current version representative. B is the version that we're working on.
Why do I have S then?
That was the one we had seen before, and this was the one that was handed out that we were working on last committee meeting. We do have some more copies here for you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. The wording in the for versions S and B are the same. They're just on different lines because of the definition placed up on page three. So once again, just to repeat the two changes, on page 5, line 9, we're inserting the word surface after the word new. And then on page 6, line 2, after the word unless. Item number 1 is the same wording. Number 2 is what's new.
So it would strike lines 2 through 5 and add this in.
Correct.
So you'd have to renumber the lines too then. Huh?
Correct.
Okay.
Lines line 4 where it says the governor shall provide the analysis justification would continue to be in the section. And I did share this language with the department earlier today.
Does the department have any comment on the language? Excuse me, before we get into that, though, I apologize, Representative Wilson, you had your hand up, so why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this amendment, because down here it says, or is necessary to provide road access to a community's airport or port, or is funded through the Rustic Road Program, and I know that I need to kind of go, the Rustic Road Program in this bill is something brand new, right?
Yes, it is.
So it's going to make four rustic roads in the state?
Mike?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, what it does, it's creating a new category. Specifically, in this current version of the bill, we've identified three existing roads, and we basically have said you must keep these roads rustic. The fourth one is a new road to access a very high potential gold mine site.
And we'll call that a rustic road? I'm sorry.
Because a rustic road is defined as one that won't be paved.
And all of these happen to be in the same district right now?
No, Representative Wilson.
Okay.
Do you know just offhand what areas those are in, Mike? Can you explain
as
that
in,
for her, just for her benefit?
Yes. Copper River Highway is Cordova area. The Denali Highway is between.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay. And then the Hatcher Pass Road is right on, kind of on the borderline with Representative Massex and Representative Corrine's area and Representative Ogun's area.
Outside of my area.
But yeah, but it's right there at the Mat-Su area. Mountaintop. It's a mountaintop road. Nope.
So probably, Willow is probably about 150 miles south of Denali.
Okay.
And it's between Willow and Palmer through a mountain pass.
How many miles on each?
Sorry.
And the fourth one is off the Kuskokwim Road. Or Kuskokwim River. Donlin Creek. Yeah.
Yes, Representative Massey.
Mr. Chairman, how did you pick? How did you pick and
select that particular
select
group?
Hatcher Pass Road?
Through the chair, Representative Massey, what we took a look at was some of the projects that are funded in the Alaska Highway Program that were slated for paving. That there seemed to be a tremendous number of dollars associated for roads that had very, very low traffic counts. For instance, over the top at Summit, there on the Hatcher Pass Road, the traffic count is 85. 85 cars a day, excuse me, average. And that road's also only open for a few months out of the year. And it seemed to be a non-prioritization of DOT funding when we took a look at the horrible state of the Old Glenn Highway, which had no money ever placed into the STIP system for beyond 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what we looked at were very low usage roads. The three roads combined, existing roads, had less than, just had slightly over 200 total cars a day count among all three roads, but yet many tens of millions of dollars were being programmed for those roads.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative Massey?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to bring up the fact that when we had Miller's Reach fire, they shut off part of the Parks Highway, and the people up in the northern end of the Parks Highway couldn't get back to the southern part. And I think DOT is looking at improving that road,
mm-hmm.
just so we'll have an alternative access. So
yep.
I think that this Hatcher Pass road should be taken out of here.
Representative Massey, through the chair, there is nothing that says in this bill that they cannot work on a rustic road, that they cannot improve a rustic road, that they cannot improve the drainage, they cannot improve the curves, they cannot improve the bridges. It says we don't want to pave them.
Representative Kukish and Wilson.
I think that under Section 19, where you talk about building a rustic trail for economic reasons and may the department never pave it, doesn't make any sense to me. If you build a road for economic reasons, then it seems to me that a road ought to be paved. So I guess that's one of the problems I have with this bill, and I also think that Representative Massey's concern about an area that she's familiar with is another problem with this bill. I'm just starting to add those up, and I'm just trying to find a way to look at the bill as a whole and be positive about it. I just can't seem to find it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this bill, combining these two, may have been a good idea of somebody, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. I think this bill's a waste of time and effort, and we ought to just put it back in a black closet someplace and leave it alone.
Representative Wilson.
I have a couple questions, but one of them is, which one of these is supposed to be on the way to a gold mine? If I read this over here, 5% of the transportation money needs to be spent on the rustic road system?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. We've defined rustic roads to be roads and trails. Okay, that's... And 5%, yes, is correct. There's a misunderstanding, it seems, by the committee to say that we cannot work on these roads. Yes, we can work on these roads. The issue is trying to provide pioneer access. The department has not placed any money into pioneer road access. Last year, the House passed a bill, and it's on the Senate side right now, the Pioneer Road Task Force. What this bill primarily does, it provides the rustic road category provides a funding mechanism for those pioneer roads.
Also?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess what I my concern is, and I think the rustic roads are, the whole thought process is wonderful, and I think that's great, but in my area we have a lot of roads that are dependent upon, people depend upon to get back and forth. And I know in Prince of Wales there's some roads that really need improvement there. And when I'm looking at a rustic road who you don't want to make improvements on, to take precedent over maybe the money that could be used for somebody else's road that really is dependent on, I have a concern. And it's not because I'm against rustic roads, because I'm not. But I feel, how much is 5% of the transportation budget? How much money are we talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the department, and I've handed out a chart to you. Keeping in mind, once again, that we're not talking 5% taken out of local roads. If you take a look, well, it was in last week's packet, what we did is we took a 1% reduction in the community transportation program funds and put that towards the rustic road and trail category.
The follow-up, Mr. Chairman? I'm sorry. So then out of that community, you're taking the money out of that community's money and putting it somewhere else?
Well, through the chair,
or are you going to take it out of my
community? It's out of the entire program, of the community transportation program, which is one of the statewide funding sources.
$79,000 a mile to $78,000 a mile. The National Highway Roads goes from $20,400 to Rustic Roads gets $93,000.
That, through the chair, that's a pretty deceptive type comment, or excuse me, calculation for the Rustic Roads of the $93,000. Those are the miles that are laid out in the bill as is. It's not for any roads that the legislature would nominate for additional roads to be funded through this category. So that's a very skewed dollar amount there at this point.
And the reason is because there's only so many miles, I'm trying to add them up,
yeah,
listed, and because there's only so many miles, it has a high number right here. Right.
But for 188 miles, in other words, there's 93,000 per mile,
Representative Wilson, just not to belabor the math point there, that's a self-defined math calculation of a certain dollars by 188 miles. The 188 miles is just the beginning. The legislature may, in this bill, according to this legislature, can identify a road, a pioneer road, so to speak, that would fall in that category. So each time you would add a road to it, that number is going to go down considerably. So that's a pretty, I think it's a misleading statistic here to look at that lane miles at this point for rustic roads.
I still would like to know what 5% back over here where we're taking money out of our transportation budget as a whole, what is the 5%? What's that total number?
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Jeff Otteson, Alaska DOT. Approximately $350 million per year is available in what we call formula money. That is money that has not otherwise been earmarked by Congress or is dedicated under various laws to go to very obscure categories. It's the money that has general flexibility in the executive of the state. That's about $350 million. So 5% of that's about $17.5
million. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, may I follow up on that, please? Mm-hmm. And what we were doing is we took 1% out of the community transportation program, applied that towards this. We took 1% out of the Alaska highway system and applied it toward this category. And we took 3% out of the track program and applied it to this category. Keeping in mind that the definition of rustic roads includes trails. So we were talking unpaved trails, which we did have some testimony from some of the like snow machine groups, for instance. These would be able to provide access to some resource areas with respect to fishing or hunting areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, right here on number 4, it says trails and recreational access for Alaska system. So we already have 5% to that area already. And now you're saying that you're going to use... I'm just concerned that we're taking $350 million a year out of
17.5.
No. We're taking 17.5 million out of the 350.
Okay.
That's 5%.
Basic bottom line is, who isn't going to get
the 17.5?
Right. You know, I mean, none of us have enough money in the roads that we have now. That's where I'm coming from. And so then we're deciding all at once that we're going to fix roads that you don't even want fixed. I mean, you know, and I'm just concerned about that, because I've got places in Sitka and Petersburg and Wrangell that aren't fixed the way we want them yet. And we're taking money away from those areas to give to an area that people really don't want fixed.
Representative.
Excuse me, Mike. We'll go to Kukesh and Capster, and then...
I just want to make a comment that the transportation money is transportation money is transportation money. And $17 million would go a long ways toward that budget deficit we have on the marine highway system. I think that fits right into what you're saying.
Thank you. Representative Capster.
I wanted to ask a few questions of Mr. Downing.
Sure. Before we have Mr. Downing... answer. Mike, did you want to just respond to Representative Wilson's final question?
Yeah, Representative Wilson, through the chair. you're correct in that we received testimony that some of these roads we don't want fixed. The issue is that DOT was programming tens of millions of dollars for those roads that were coming out of the roads for other areas that desperately need that money. Tens of millions of dollars. That was in the initial packet I provided to you. Committee of what DOT had programmed for the Denali Highway, the Copper River Highway, and Hatcher Pass Road.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you have pared it down, and so compared to what they were going to spend, they're going to spend a lot less now?
On those roads, yes.
Was that under this new designation of rustic roads?
Yes.
So essentially the thrust of the legislation is to say we just disagree with DOT's prioritization, and that there's roads that they're putting money into to upgrade that we think should be put elsewhere. That's really the thrust of what we're trying to accomplish here.
That isn't what I heard, that's not what I heard, so there's a big difference there.
That's why I say that we can put this in a closet and come out with something that it says exactly what you want to say. This doesn't do it. I mean, it's so confusing and so circle that it just doesn't make sense.
What I'd like to do is...
I'm trying to focus on it because I read it and it doesn't tell me that.
What I'd like to do is have Mr. Downing come back to the table here so he can address Representative Capster's questions.
On a point that you raised earlier, Mr. Chairman, so from what I gleaned from your comments just now is that you're unhappy with the way the department is managing their money, and mm-hmm. this is an effort by the legislature to go in and kind of micromanage, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Essentially, yes. Yes, ma'am. Mr. Downing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, before I ask my question, if you could give us an overview of what you see this amendment doing or how it affects your department, or the bill and then your department.
Through the chair, Representative Kastner, my comments about the rural concerns still exist, and they get partially addressed here, but not fully addressed here. We do projects, we do a range of project types, and we've listed in here a list of included allowable projects that wouldn't have to go through this cost-benefit process. Not included on the list is a whole bunch of other kinds of projects that are significant, and I think that we should continue to construct. Those are projects that have, as their basis, economic development, safety, recreation, quality of life, the intent to address an environmental issue, fish passage. We do winter trail markings in rural Alaska. They're not going to fit into this set of categories. They're also not going to have a positive cost-benefit ratio. So all of those, that whole body of projects gets left unaddressed. That's a concern. As a general concern, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act gave us a duty to equitably distribute these funds, and we're under that environmental justice provision now. And what we're not allowed to do is execute a program that has a disparate impact on either minority populations or economically disadvantaged populations. I'm left thinking that at the end of this amendment, we're still in a position where we can't meet the requirements of that duty.
Did you have any further questions?
Yeah, I have some specific questions.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested in the Donlin Creek project and why that fits under the rustic road, why, just how that's going to play into the development of that mine. Do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Kastner, I'm not familiar with that project or why it was included on the list. I couldn't address that.
This road runs from the Kuskokwim River up to the proposed mine site. The mine basically needs a way to haul fuel. They have a very energy-intensive ore processing process needed because of the nature of the ore. They have a very rich mine, but the ore is locked up, I think, in sulfites is the technical term. It takes a lot of electricity to basically get that out of the ore, so they need a lot of energy to make this mine go, and that's what this road is all about. But it would be this would be an industrial road serving a single industrial owner, would not be serving a community interest or community to community kind of road. And our view of it right now is that this is a multi-billion-dollar mine, basically looking for a handout from government when there are many other needs in the state that don't have a way to pay for themselves.
Kastner, did you have any follow-up?
I just had a follow-up. How do they rank on the STIP as it is? Are they even on the STIP?
They've just started been talking to us, and we've been looking at this road under our area plans process. That's why I know about it, and we think it would be an excellent candidate for something like ADA, where they work with ADA, they bring some money to the table, and then they pay it back with the bonds that ADA can float to help that happen, much like the Red Dog Mine. And that would be the logical approach for this road. But to take our general purpose dollars that are used in communities and used to build ferries and all the things the state needs and give it to one single, mining interest as their kind of, bonus, when it appears to us that they have a mine that can be viable without this investment, is it the wrong public policy?
Do you know which projects might be bumped off the list, like the Bethel, Ptarmigan Road? I mean, where would we lose in that region if this project was to go forward?
Well, I believe it's a 22 or 25 mile road. You made a round number, it would be $2 or $3 million a mile. You're looking at a $50 to $75 million project. It would bump, $15 5 million projects out of the STIP. It would have a tremendous ripple effect for several years in the STIP. But on one hand, the flip side of it is it has to get through the environmental impact statement that Mike talked about. It could take 10 years to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, on the following Representative Kapsner's line on the Donlin Creek, how many miles of road are we talking about there?
The number I heard, and it's not fresh in my mind, was about 22 or 25 miles of road, that road.
Okay.
That's all a new alignment, never been built before.
Right, new construction. Earlier, before the meeting, we talked a little bit about, for the other members' information, a new system that the Department of Transportation has put out that just, the regs that just came out that I really wasn't very aware of, to be honest with you, which kind of addresses the same problems that the rustic road bill is trying to do. And under the category of Alaska Highway System, which has 8% right now, you explained to me, and I'd just like you to clarify a little more, that under that system, some of these rustic roads might find themselves in there in a better position than what they are in the past before these new regs came out. Could you explain that category in a little more detail as how they would apply to the rustic roads?
If I may, I was the author of these regulations. They took effect on March 8th of this year, so they're less than 2 weeks old. The effect of the Alaska Highway System, which is a new STIP category established in these regulations, is to give a class of roads that up until now have been somewhat like orphans. They are state-owned highways, both existing and planned, that are out in the middle of nowhere. They're basically in between the population centers. They serve resource needs. They serve small communities. They serve linkages between recreational areas and population centers. They weren't important enough in the eyes of Congress to rise to the National Highway System. The National Highway System has a congressionally designated list. So this new Alaska Highway System sets aside a pot of money to this new class of roads. There's about 38 or 40 roads on that list, of which about 35 of those are existing roads. Four or five of them are roads that are planned corridors, much like Donlin Creek. Just to give you a few examples, there are roads in Southeast, such as the road to the south end of Mitkoff Island. There's several roads in Prince of Wales Island that are part of this list. There are roads in Ketchikan and Juneau. There are roads in Mat-Su Valley. There are roads in Fairbanks. There are roads all over the state, in the Iliamna region and the Bethel region. On one hand, we've designated them and given them a certain class of money. But if you look at the top half of this little spreadsheet, you see that we're only allocating about 8% of the STIP to this category. So they're getting about $20,000 per centerline mile per year, the lowest amount of money of any of the categories. And so what that tells me is they're being given money, but they're not being given the kind of money that allows you to go out and build a gold-plated road. You've got to build a basic, low-volume, rural-standard kind of highway with this money if you're going to make it spread. This is not expensive. The new bill creates a very parallel category. Rustic roads implies the same kind of road, but by giving that small number of miles, 5% of the pot, you've elevated it to the most expensive or the most lavishly funded category of roads in the state, more lavishly funded than the National Highway System or the Community Transportation Program.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just
yes.
I don't want to get into an argument over what the rustic roads did.
Right.
More so, I would like to know more about the Alaska Highway System. Part of the problem, and that's why I supported the rustic roads amendment, and I asked that they be combined because I thought it was a great idea, and where we've had the frustration of some of these roads never being able to meet the standards,
right,
and never being able to meet the traffic counts. Tell me how the Alaska Highway System category that you just wrote regs for changes that.
It took them out of the competition process with local roads in urban areas, the local roads to your post office and schools. Communities were coming into the process, putting money on the table to basically match the state's money, and that would give them more points in the scoring process. And these sort of urban and suburban roads were rising to the top, leaving this class of Alaska Highway unfunded. Up until March 8th, those roads were competing in CTP in a scoring process. The Alaska Highway pot now is much like the National Highway System pot. It's a pot where it has a small amount of money set aside. It's unscored, meaning it's up to the discretion of the commissioner to look at all the things that he looks at in making a decision, traffic volumes and where do you have a need. To give you an example of the kinds of roads that this would fund right away, I would think would be the road between Williamsport and Pyle Bay has been designated in our Southwest plan as the highest priority road in that region. several roads in other parts of the state that are low volume, the kinds of roads you're talking about, and I think the kind of money we're allocating suggests that we're going to talk about a low volume standard, not a high volume standard. I think where there seems to be a rub, if I may just finish, is the issue of paving. What's driving us to paving these low volume roads is we have no money to run graders up and down. You know, we've been so underfunded on the maintenance side, paving has become our only strategy to keep those roads from falling apart in a matter of a year or two. So we're being driven by one process that says cut the operating budget, which is what runs road graders, and trying to fix it with the capital budget, which is our only reasonable reaction.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I may continue. Thank you. So the rustic category that we've developed in this bill would, for all intents and purposes, fit into the Alaska Highway System category of the new regs.
Precisely.
And what is the stip right now under the rustic road program? We only have four that have been nominated at this point. What is the nomination criteria, and what is the stip criteria? I shouldn't say stip, but the rating.
There is no scoring process.
Okay.
It's just as there's no scoring process currently with the National Highway System. These are roads already owned by the state. They will most likely be owned by the state forevermore. They tend to be the kinds of roads that communities aren't ready to step forward and take ownership of. They are roads out in the big empty, to put it bluntly. And so we anticipate we're going to own them. We're going to use our own management systems. We have several management systems that look at this.
Oh, my question, though.
Your question? I think I'm trying to get to it.
Okay.
So there is no rating. There is no scoring system, as you speak to.
Right.
It's an unscored category.
Okay, unscored category.
Right.
Who rates them? The commissioner rates them, so he's got 30 to 40 roads there that he would rate
right.
On the advice of staff.
Staff, right.
And then as far as paving or a standard of road. Now, Powell Bay, for instance, you brought up, or I'll bring up another one in my area, Jackaloff, Rocky River. I could bring up one that's not built yet that cuts from East End Road to the Nanelchik Domes that a lot of people talk about. But some of those areas there, what type of standard would have to be, I mean, would we have to bring them up to a certain standard? Because I know that that also is a negative as far as cost. If you're having a winter road, if you're having it shut down for the winter, are those things available in this program?
Yes, sir.
Through the chair, Representative Scalzi, the statutes tell us to follow the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials standards to the extent that it's practicable. AASHTO has just recently produced a low-volume roads guide that essentially establishes standards for roads that have traffic of less than 250 cars per day on them, and so that would be the standard that we would follow. And it's a relatively easy standard for us to meet. It's nothing like the National Highway System standards that we built to manage that system. So there is an appropriate solution.
Okay. The bedding, for instance, is have to have 2 feet of crush on top of a 4 foot pit run and with a 3/4 minus cap. I mean, those kind of things. Are there standards that are that rigid that they would be create a cost prohibitive road?
Through the chair, Representative Scalzi, every foundation condition is going to be different than if you've got permafrost, peat bog, or you've got good gravel, you just have this wide variety. But the requirement would be to take what we call a design vehicle, which is a road. Honestly, I can't tell you if the design vehicle for those low-volume roads has been adjusted down from the HS25 that we currently use. It likely has. That's what introduces the load. But the other thing that introduces loads is the equivalent axle loads on that highway in a year. And ESOLs, it's called, and we design according to ESOLs, and we say, okay, a big heavy truck introduces more, causes more damage, and a lighter duty vehicle is less. I would speculate that they've got both in that guide. And so but in summary, the standard is going to be much lower.
Mm-hmm. I'll just continue just a little longer, Mr. Chairman. I'm getting the answers I need, so thank you. Winter summer closures, is that an option in this category?
Through the chair, Representative Scalzi, closures really are being driven by our maintenance budget.
No, what I mean is could we construct or we could we resurface a road that has limited use, but we say we're going to shut it down in September 30th because we don't want liability in the winter, we don't want road maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. We recognize low volume constitutes a much lower rated road, and therefore we're going to shut it down. Because I know that from the borough roads, we've had problems with liability issues when we shut down, when we don't plow a road in the wintertime, and we've had an instance where a snow machiner was killed on a non-plowed road. It forced us to plow all the roads or take them off of our maintenance list. And I really think that we need to develop some of these roads for just summertime use. And I would hope that they would qualify for this particular category.
We could determine to close those roads in the wintertime. And the liability issue, there is an AG's opinion that says that the department's duty to maintain runs only as far as its funding.
Oh.
And if we run out of money, we run out of duty to maintain. It's a summary of it. I mean, they said it in pages, but there it is in a couple sentences.
Representative Capson.
I ran out of gas for a while, so go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Capson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if what Representative Scalzi wants with just a summer road, if that could fit into some already designated categories that DOT has in existence.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I think the prudent thing to do is to hold this bill over longer, and we'll just do so indefinitely. And what I'd like to do is to maybe work on this bill some more, and I'll have Mike go to each individual member and try to work out the concerns. If we can't, we'll just not proceed with the bill. But I don't want to try to advance something and push upon the committee something that we don't have a high comfort level with. And obviously, there's some concerns at this point. So we'll hold it over indefinitely, do some more work on it. If we decide collectively to bring it back, we'll do so at that time. So do appreciate everybody's attendance and your concerns and your work. And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.